We made this.
The TARDIS crew, a Doc 2 podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Greenland, and I'm joined in my adventure through time and space by my son Ben, the biggest Doc 2 fan this side of Gallifrey. How are you, Ben?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, like usual.
Yes?
Yes.
Enjoying Doc 2 as always?
Yes.
Every day.
Every day.
This time we have two more guests in the TARDIS. Join us, our fellow Big Finish reviewers from the We Made This, Lachlan Haycock and T. Dave Velasquez. How are you?
Hello. Hello, Baz. Good to be here.
Hello, Baz. It's great to be here. I'm absolutely thrilled. And as always, you can call me Dan, as we're old friends.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're gonna, you are TDD Velasquez, but we refer to you as Dan for the podcast. Absolutely. So before we get into the content of this podcast, we always have any new guests on the TARDIS crew. We like to question them a bit about their Doctor Who fandom. So I'm going to hand over to Ben, and you're going to ask a couple of general questions, aren't you?
Yeah, just a few to start off with. So I think the main one that people tend to ask at first is, what's your favourite Doctor?
So Lachlan, do you want to start?
Yeah, that is a good place to start. I guess it's somewhat obligatory, I guess, if you're a fan of Doctor Who, or you're on a podcast or something, to share your favourite incarnation. So I first came across Doctor Who, I think it was back in about 2006. So I'd have to say my first Doctor is the 10th Doctor, but my favourite would then definitely be the 11th. It was something about Matt Smith's portrayal as the 11th Doctor that really, really connected with me. I know, Ben, you're a fan as well, is that right?
Yes. Matt Smith is also my favourite.
Yeah, your kindred spirits. Yeah. Ben started with a little bit of Tennant as well, and then, technically Tom Baker, but that's another story. But Tennant was the first kind of sort of one you watched on occasion, and then Matt Smith is your favourite Doctor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something similar there, I think, for me.
Absolutely. So what about you, Dan?
May I just say, Ben and Lachlan both have great taste, but I don't quite agree. I do love Matt Smith, but I'm a long-standing Who fan since the early 90s. And actually, appropriately for this episode, my favourite Doctor is the 8th.
Oh, amazing. Paul McGann is amazing, which is why we're doing this podcast, aren't we? Yeah, I think, Matt Smith's my second favourite. Paul McGann's up there. Tom Baker's my favourite for me. I love a good Tom Baker story, but they're all good. So, any other questions you want to ask before we go?
Yeah. Do you have any favourite stories in particular?
Oh, from all of Doctor Who?
I'd say so.
Yeah, oh, TV, Big Finish, the whole lot. What's your favourite? It's a big question.
Where to start? We got half an hour, 40 minutes now. I think just a more recent one that I'll go with. There are of course dozens, but a more recent example of something an episode that I really, really did like when I watched it, and continue to really love whenever I rewatch it, is World Enough in Time, and also I guess The Doctor Falls. I think that is just simply for the final sort of 5 to 10 minutes, that cliffhanger is superb. I think it's absolutely amazing, and just as the culmination of the 12th Doctor of series 10 and the 12th Doctor's era, that's an episode I get chills every single time I get to the end of that.
It's an amazing one. I think maybe we'll have to get you back on another episode to discuss that two-parter.
Sounds good.
What about you, Dan?
Well, I don't like to be pinned down to single favourites. They're coming threes for me, so I'll be very quickly. I don't have to think about this. My three favourite stories from Classic Who are The Caves of Androzani, The Curse of Fenric, and The Talons of Weng Chiang. So I'll be interested to talk to you one day, Ben, because I know you don't like Talons. And my three favourite stories from New Who are Rose, which is the first episode of New Who, and then Love and Monsters.
Wow.
And School Reunion. And I'm not saying that those are the episodes I think are the best. They're my favourites. I've watched Rose millions of times, and I think it's just wonderful. So,
oh, definitely. Well, we'll get you back on to discuss maybe one or two of those episodes as well. Yeah, lots of good stuff there.
Defending Love and Monsters like we did Time Lash.
Yes, we have defended Time Lash already. Yeah, so.
Well, can I say one of the reasons why I was so excited to come on this podcast is that I did hear that, and you guys almost made me want to watch Time Lash again. Almost. I've not seen it for 22 years, I think, and I may not watch it again. But you're nudging me.
I think you need to give it a try. Yeah. So let's get into why we're here then. So in this episode, we are going to be talking Big Finish, specifically the continuation of the Eighth Doctor Adventures with Paul McGann's Doctor. While he only got one big TV appearance in the 1996 TV movie, which I know Dan and you are, we both watched, I think, at the time. And then briefly again in the 50th special mini episode, Night of the Doctor, there were literally hundreds of stories featuring the Eighth Doctor Big Finish. So Ben, for the uninitiated in the world of Big Finish, what is Big Finish?
Essentially, it's an audio company that has the Doctor Who license to produce brand new adventures in audio format using almost all of the original actors at this point.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, you know, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Tom Baker, they're all back, and obviously Paul McGann has kind of got his redemption. Well, it's not a redemption, I say he got his time in the limelight on audio form, hasn't he, certainly?
I think that's a fair thing to say, yeah. I don't know if it's 100 stories that he's done, but there's certainly a lot. And also, you've got to factor in all the novels about the Eighth Doctor that came out from the time of the movie.
Yeah, there's the Eighth Doctor Adventures.
There's that range of books was running for about 8 or 9 years, I think, one a month. So there are loads of adventures. I didn't have to do much. For this episode, I thought, shall I sit down and read and remind myself about things? But I didn't. I just sat down and thought, and what I could remember about the Eighth Doctor Big Finish audios and all the ones I heard over the years. And I have a pretty good memory. I understand Lachlan is more kind of better on the more recent stories, but I was a regular listener from the start of the Eighth Doctor audios all the way up till about 2014-ish. And after that, it gets a bit spotty. So I've got pretty good recall.
Yeah, so Dan, you've been pretty much with Big Finish since the start.
Absolutely, yes. I still have my CD copy of The Sirens of Time, the very first Big Finish audio, which I bought by mail order in 1999.
And of course, Lachlan, you've covered a lot of the more recent Eighth Doctor events, haven't you? Big Finish.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's funnily enough, I probably came on board with listening to Big Finish on a regular basis, probably from about 2015 onwards. So funnily enough, my it's been more recent for me, and for Dan, it's been probably anything up until 2014, 2015. So there's a nice kind of symmetry there. Yeah.
Yeah,
our third chunk of discussion is going to be a bit spotty for Dan, then, it seems.
So, yeah, I think let's delve a bit deeper into the Eighth Doctor Adventures then, a Big Finish. So, am I right in saying, Ben, there were three distinct eras of the Eighth Doctor?
I'd probably say so. Like, his original run with Charlie and at times Keres, and then they did the Mary Shelley trilogy thing as well in the main range. Yeah, and then we got the Lucy Miller stuff, which then got an extra box set back in 2019, I think. And then after that's what I sort of think of as the box set years, with like Dark Eyes, Doom Coalition, Ravenous, Stranded as well up now. And I'd say the Time War ones is like slightly separate, but like a pseudo area of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So shall we get into that kind of first era and go a bit more deep dive then? So let's start with essentially were the main range stories, weren't they? So when they used to do Doctor Who main ranges on Big Finish, a monthly release, and they alternated Doctors, that's kind of where Paul McGann was seeded into Doctor Who at Big Finish, wasn't he?
Yes, although from the start it was slightly different, because the main range was a monthly range and you could have a different Doctor every month. That's how it ran for the first few years. Well, it's always been like that. But when the Eighth Doctor first joined the range, Big Finish would give him like a 4 month or a 6 month season of adventures, and the other Doctors would effectively be suspended for that time. So in 2001, the first season was released, which was 4 months, four stories. And then the next year, they did six stories across 6 months. So they really worked on creating the sense of an ongoing series which had kind of arcs running across it, things like that. There was a big plot of based around the exact nature of Charlie, the companion, who was kind of out of time. She was picked up from a disaster in the 1930s, which she should have not survived. She was a passenger on the R101 airship that crashed, and the Doctor kind of rescued her from that event, which later on has impact because of the temporal consequences of that. So that was kind of a thread that developed along it, and they didn't really have ongoing threads in the other monthly ranges because it was just a different Doctor every month. It was an anthology series, really, which was great. But with the Eighth Doctor stories, they kind of experimented with kind of ongoing arcs, and everything kind of in the first few years led up to Zagreus, which was the 40th anniversary story released in November 2003, which was essentially the Big Finish version of the Five Doctors, or the Day of the Doctor before, 10 years before the Day of the Doctor. It was just all the actors that they had, all the kind of regular Doctor Who actors. So you had Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy and Paul McGann in one story. Tom Baker still hadn't joined Big Finish at that point. You even had John Pertwee, who at the time was dead, but they managed to get recording of him from a fan.
Very video. Much like the Five Doctors.
They got some a recording of his performance from a fan video production, and they wrote the script to accommodate the lines that he'd said in the fan video, and kind of the story kind of twisted around that, and it sounds quite tortuous, but it was quite effective, actually. I remember at the time it did feel really special.
So India Fisher was the Eighth Doctor's kind of first companion there, and Ben, you're quite a big fan of the Eighth Doctor and Charlie relationship.
Yeah, I went through a binge of listening to all those stories like the end of last year and the start of this year, so I've got quite a recent memory of that arc, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you describe that relationship as kind of one of the quintessential Doctor-Companion relationships.
Yeah, definitely. It's probably also the best done Doctor-Companion romance relationship that the show's ever seen, probably. Much better than Ten and Rose.
Wow, shots fired. Okay.
Yeah, Ben's got plenty of controversial opinions, though I do share that one, actually. I find Ten and Rose quite insufferable, to be honest.
I don't think you're alone in feeling like that, but I also wouldn't really describe the relationship between the Eighth Doctor and Charlie as romantic. It has depth, and she definitely has romantic feelings for him, but his response is much more complex, and I think it's explored wonderfully in a story called Scherzo, which is by Rob Shearman, who wrote Dalek for the TV series. Scherzo is the first story after Zagreus, and it's just Charlie and the Doctor alone in a strange void, and it comes shortly after she's kind of admitted, or he's told her that he loves her, but he kind of means it in a friend fashion, and she takes it as being romantic. So he then has to kind of reject her on that basis, but also kind of keep her on side as a friend. The whole story is just Paul McGann and India Fisher talking to each other. There's nobody else in it. I've not heard it for a long time because I think I lent it to somebody and never got it back. But I definitely listened to it a couple of times at least. And it's just extraordinary. I'd really like to say that it's fantastic because I remember reading an interview with Rob Shearman, the writer, when he was very down on it. And he said, I think I failed in my job as a writer because Doctor Who has to be entertaining and Scherzo isn't. It's like a meditation on emotions. But it is entertaining because it's really frightening in a way. The void that they're in is so strange. and playing that against this kind, these kind of hot emotions that they're both going through. It's an extraordinary piece of work. I really recommend that one. Have you heard that, Ben?
Yes, I have. I've heard the entire arc up from Storm Warning to Girl Who Never Was.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Lachlan, are you familiar with the earlier Ranger?
Yeah, so I've listened to a smattering of those earlier stories. I haven't made it all the way up to Scherzer or Zagreus or anything, but I guess something that strikes me about those early stories, like Storm Warning or Sword of Orion or even the sort of the Stones of Venice, I remember listening to, obviously the Charms of Midnight as well. I was struck by that sort of rapport between those two lead actors, I guess, and the way that between the two characters and the way that the actors bring, I guess from the beginning, just this sort of energy and enthusiasm to their parts that make those stories very involving and memorable in a really sort of cool way, and a great sense of place and strong sense of setting in those early stories as well, from what I remember and from what I've listened to. Something really, really special, I guess, began then. Not that I was listening at that point, 2001, but looking back, I can see how it would have been a big thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm the same as you. I haven't listened to all of those stories yet, like Dan and Ben, but you know, that relationship really is at the heart of those stories, and I think she's a really good companion, and they balance off each other so well.
Yeah, and then after Scherzo, we get the Divergent universe where they bring in Keres, which adds another layer to the relationship, and ultimately his fate leads to the separation of the Doctor and Charlie until she goes and meets the Sixth Doctor, which is a whole other story.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't heard as many of the Keres stories. I do like him, but I've not heard all of them, and my affection is really for the run of stories where it's just the Doctor and Charlie. They did work together incredibly well. It's worth remembering as well that I think Charlie was the first time that Big Finish had created an original companion. They've done it a lot now.
I don't think it's quite that. I think Evelyn did get introduced a bit before.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Sorry, I was forgetting the wonderful Maggie Stables as Evelyn Smythe. You're right. Yeah. So I don't know what I'm talking about, but nevertheless, I think India Fisher was just wonderful casting as that character, and they discovered her. She's in a Peter Davison story, Winter for the Adepts, playing a different character. And then they created a companion for her, and I think she was. It was just perfect. So the whole idea of the kind of style suggested by a character coming from the 1930s, the way she speaks, 1930s Britain, I should say, the way she speaks, the kind of references she makes, it's perfectly captured in the writing, and her performance completely reflects that wonderfully well.
I guess she did something right with both the actor and the character. If she's popped up many times since, hasn't she, in lots of different other stories and her own sort of solo series for a few two or three releases there, and popping up in later Eighth Doctor stories, like a companion piece a few years ago in the Ravenous series. So there's obviously something happened, something did, you know, went well there, and people responded to her. She's really, yeah, persevered over the years.
So what would you both say is your favourite story from this run that you've listened to?
Lachlan, you go first.
Oh, thank you. Well, of the few that I can remember, listening to The Sword of Orion was something that I did quite early on in my history, you know, my history of listening to Big Finish audios. That was one of the early ones, and that sticks out to me simply for that reason. Really, it was still quite new to the audio drama world, and that release. Yeah, it stood out to me in a very strong way. The sense of setting, the Cybermen stalking a spaceship's corridors and hunting down people in classic Cybermen fashion. It stuck with me. But honestly, any of those early few releases was, like we were saying earlier, pretty special.
I agree. In fact, Sword of Orion is an interesting choice because that was one that I didn't like on first listening, but then I listened to it again and again and again, and it just became so comfortable. I loved it, and that's true of a few of them. But the ones that struck me as really good on first listening and have remained great, well, Chimes of Midnight and Seasons of Fear, I think, are the pinnacle of maybe the whole of Big Finish, really. Seasons of Fear is almost my favourite Doctor Who story. The only reason I'm slightly hesitant in saying that is that I haven't heard it for a long, long time. But I just think it's got such a perfect blend of humour and history and the kind of science fiction end of things. It's got a great monster, which is from the TV series. I'm not going to spoil which monster it is for anyone who's heard it. But it is a monster from a TV episode that I've never actually seen. But but it's really good in Seasons of Fear. Yeah, I just love it, that one. That one's written by Paul Cornell and Caroline Simcox. Paul Cornell, who wrote the TV episode Human Nature and Father's Day, and his wife Caroline Simcox. And it's just got a lovely blend. Both of those stories make me laugh out loud. Chimes of Midnight, it's also bone-chilling, as I'm sure. I think we've probably all heard that here, have we?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it is Chimes of Midnight. Chimes of Midnight is such a good story. It's my favourite Doctor Who Christmas story. You know, it's including all the specials as well, the TV specials. Right. It's so rich and chilling, and yeah, it's just a really, really great listen, very atmospheric. I think it's really hard to beat Chimes of Midnight. I do actually really like Stormwarning as well. I think it's such a really good, solid introduction to the Doctor and Charlie relationship, and the nature of the historical setting, the disaster movie feel to it as well is so good. It's a really, really, really good, solid introduction to those characters.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with Chimes of Midnight, although I do also really like The Next Life, which is the end of the Divergence arc, which I feel gets a bit too much flack. There's Neverland, which I think is really good. It's like Zagreus before Zagreus. And also Time Works, I thought was quite a nice one, with Keres towards the latter end of the range.
Some interesting choices there. I think the last thing before we move on as well is it was lovely to hear Charlie get that call back in Night of the Doctor, like a few of the companions, like Lucy and a few others later on as well, because, you know, such an important character, and to kind of get that slightly more canon official banner, you know, by being called out by the Eighth Doctor in his final moments before his regeneration was a really lovely kind of touch as well.
Mm. Yeah, I was delighted by that, yeah.
Shame you didn't mention like some of the later ones, which obviously hadn't happened yet, so it couldn't be written in the script, like Liv and Helen and Bliss and so on. Maybe we'll just put that down to Eight's about to regenerate, so his never-ending amnesia came back to haunt him one last time.
I like your headcanon there. That's good.
Yes, it's very convenient the way that Paul McGann just trails off at the end of that sentence, conveniently leaving space for anyone else.
Exactly. There's all the other 20 companions that follow.
Yeah, it's just that's right, they actually cut it quickly but make it look really seamless.
I have to say as well, you mentioned The Night of the Doctor. That was, I think, the sort of the way in for me into listening to Big Finish. I didn't regularly start listening until probably a few years afterwards, about 2015, like I said earlier. But if it wasn't for that mention of those companions, Charlie, Keres, Lucy, Tams and Molly, in The Night of the Doctor, if Stephen Moffat hadn't inserted that line, I'm not sure I would have come across Big Finish quite as soon. I really love The Night of the Doctor as well, and it's personally, I think it's a great Eighth Doctor story, and so it just sort of opens up this entire world for anyone who, like myself, wasn't quite aware of what that line meant until I went away and read up about it.
Yeah, I think Night of the Doctor is a great advert for Big Finish. But it's also painful because wouldn't it be wonderful to just have loads of Night of the Doctors? I would love lots of 8-minute Eighth Doctor adventures that I can watch on the BBC iPlayer, because it's great, packs everything in. It's a really strong piece of work.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, that's it. If we all want an Eighth Doctor series on TV, it'd be amazing. If that's not going to happen, you know, Ben and I said, after dinner on our previous podcast, well, at least make Chimes of Midnight. Make Chimes of Midnight a Christmas special. The one-off, that'd be amazing. But yeah, even if it was like little vinaigrettes of the Doctor, that'd be wonderful too. Hopefully, we'll get, you know, whether it's Rossy Davis' 60th or something else. It would be lovely to see Paul McGann pop up on TV as well a few times, you know, maybe with a companion in tow, if that's possible too.
Blow everyone's collective minds, I think.
I think so.
Oh, hope.
Yeah.
So let's delve a little bit deeper into my favourite era of the Eighth Doctor, the fourth series of Eighth Doctor Adventures with Sheridan Smith as the main companion, Lucy Miller. This is where I got into it, courtesy of Dan, actually. I think I...
Yeah, same here.
I technically started with An Earthly Child, which is actually kind of a one-off story set slightly later, but it links to it. And then, I started with Blood of the Daleks, that two-parter that introduces Sheridan Smith. And I think, Sheridan Smith is just a force of nature with the Doctor.
I mean, my start to Big Finish essentially was, again, courtesy of Dan, Light at the End, and then after that, immediately into this run with Blood of the Daleks and Horror of Glam Rock and Immortal Beloved and all those stories. Mm. So this era definitely holds more of a nostalgia factor for me, and it was definitely my first proper delve into what the Eighth Doctor could be. And Lucy Miller, is a great companion. Probably not as good as Charlie, now I've listened to enough of her stories to make that decision, but she's still a very, very good companion.
Yeah, she's very different, though, to Charlie as well.
Yeah, she's like Donna of the Eighth Doctor, because this era was in conjunction with David Tennant's run in 2006, and it feels very much like a jumping on board point for Big Finish, where it's like a blend of New Who and Classic Who, like that format, but sort of a classic New Who Doctor.
Yeah, I think they intended it to be that, didn't they? Because the Sheridan Smith series was first broadcast on BBC Digital Radio. It was made for radio before it was released on CD. In fact, I remember in 2007 thinking to myself, there's going to be a new Doctor Who series on BBC Radio. Does this mean I need to buy a digital radio? Because I didn't have one then. Obviously, subsequently, I just listened to them via, you know, buying them from Big Finish anyway. And I don't know if you guys have heard, but I remember, like, the trailers on the radio where they would definitely link the series to the TV series, and they'd say, this was what the Doctor was doing before he met Rose Tyler. And you'd have clips from the Charlie adventures, and yeah, that was great. I'm getting slightly mixed up. Because they did broadcast some of the Charlie episodes on the radio, not all of them, and it was the success of doing that that led them to the BBC to go, can we have some new special episodes made that are only for the radio? And that's what led to Sheridan Smith. So, yeah, and no, she is great. It's funny, I didn't really like Sheridan Smith before she was doing Doctor Who. You know, she's a comedy actress, but she is just fantastic in that role, and it must have opened my eyes to her abilities. She's been amazing in everything she's done since as well. And I also think she was pretty great in Jonathan Creek, if any of you saw that. And there is one episode of Jonathan Creek that she's in where Paul McGann is in it. So it's almost an Eighth Doctor TV episode. So anyone who's got BritBox, I think it's on BritBox, go find it.
Yeah, Lachlan, have you listened to this one?
Yeah, I guess I've listened to a bunch, probably about two-thirds of these four series of adventures, and I would completely agree that the big appeal, I guess, from what I understand, is how new it was, and how this was new, sort of contemporary, modern-day kind of, you know, new Doctor Who that was being released on the radio with a new companion and in a new era of a Doctor's life. I've listened to a few. If you might have guessed by now that some of my favourite stories have a very strong sense of place and setting. So there are, you know, there's a bunch in sort of the fourth series, I think, is very strong. Sort of Death in Blackpool, the Book of Kells, I was a fan of. Even Relative Dimensions, this sort of just fun Christmas story for the Doctor and Susan, who comes back. Those last few stories in that series, yeah, a lot of fun adventures. This, you know, it just had everything, didn't it? Fun adventures, new companion, returning monsters, new sort of threats, series arcs, and a big climactic ending.
Yeah.
Oh wow, yeah.
Oh yeah, the ending to that, obviously leading into Dark Eyes and the darkest era of the Eighth Doctor, probably at the point in Big Finish where he's just lost so much, he's just done with it all.
Yeah, I mean, it does go pretty dark, really, really dark towards the end, and very dramatic. It kind of it puts things like The Store on Earth and Journey's End in powers in comparison, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, I think the last two-parter in that fourth series is It to the Death and Lucy Miller, which is written by Nicholas Briggs. It's savagely dark and a great sequel to one of my favourite TV stories, which is The Dalek Invasion of Earth. It kind of takes the ideas there and really... really ramps them up so that the stakes are incredibly high and the losses are incredibly painful. I just want to pick up on something you said, Lachlan. You mentioned Death in Blackpool and also Relative Dimensions. And Baz, you said that your favourite Doctor Who Christmas story is The Chimes of Midnight. I would say my favourite Doctor Who Christmas stories are Death in Black. It is Death in Blackpool and Relative Dimensions, and they're both in that one series. I don't really think of The Chimes of Midnight as a Christmas story in the same way, because I think that the comedy elements of Death in Blackpool and Relative Dimensions are kind of important to that frothy Christmas feel, whereas Chimes of Midnight is kind of a terrifying Christmas ghost story, which I also love, but that's a different kind of Christmas entertainment for me. But yeah, those are so good. And Death in Blackpool is also the climax of what I call the anti-Pat trilogy, which is Horror of Glam Rock and The Zygon Who Fell to Earth and then Death in Blackpool. That's just, again, it's one of my favourite little mini arcs within Doctor Who that there's ever been.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, I mean, this era brings back so many old monsters as well, because in the four series, you get Daleks, Cybermen, Ice Warriors, the Eight Legs and Planet of the Spiders, Autons, Morbius, Zygons, just...
Meddling Monk.
Yes, yeah, monks here so much. And, like, especially, it starts off with that very fun, cosy feel, and then there's some semblance of an arc to start with, and then you get to season four and it just sort of all falls apart and the Doctor has to briefly get a new companion and then you get the monk stuff and Lucy on and off and then you get him in Prison of the Sun leading into that two-part finale where everything just goes to hell.
Yeah, no, I think there's a real ambition to this story and it feels very modern as well, as you said, Lachlan. It's those standalone adventures with that big a couple of like two-part big finales like Human Resources, which is just bombastic with these giant offices kind of fight each other and the Cybermen. It is great. And then it really builds on that last series is very modern, with Lucy kind of leaving and the kind of twist and turns of the new companion and then everything coming together. I mentioned Star on Earth, Journey's End. It's kind of got that kind of scale in a way, but probably bigger, with like Susan coming back and the grandson, and there's so many really big things happening there. And the way it culminates in real tragedy as well, and it's a real bleak ending. I think maybe because it's audio rather than TV, I think they can dare to go bleaker as well. It's not a happy ending to this series, but it's a real bombastic ending to the series too.
Yeah, I agree. I think occasionally, not always, but sometimes Big Finish really take advantage of the fact that they can imply really horrific things that could never be shown on TV because they're only limited by the imagination of the listener, really. And there's loads of images that you imagine in your mind in that last two-parter that would never get on television, and that's great.
One of the best things about Big Finish, particularly when you go back to the early Doctors, and I know we're slightly divergent here, but you can have a Tom Baker story or a Sylvester McCoy story or Peter Davison story with these huge bombastic, basically budgets and armies and aliens and planets and stuff, the stuff that would never have been effectively done on TV. You know, there'd always been, they either looked a little bit hokey as they do with the effects or the robbery costumes or the fake quarry planets. You know, Doctor Who has its charm, but it battled against its ambition in terms of budget. Whereas
not sometimes, Baz, nearly all the time.
Always, yeah. But I love it anyway. And, you know, whatever show you're going to have in the 60s with giant bee people on the moon, it's like, what are you? But it's, with Big Finish, there's no constraint there with the budget, and that's great. And particularly in these stories, and particularly in those final stories of the fourth series, the scale is stupendous, but it can do it because he doesn't have to worry about, you know, is this going to look believable, because you imagine it all in your mind, and that's the joy of Big Finish.
And arguably that scale simply gets bigger and bigger as the years pass by and we get into the sort of, I might be jumping ahead, but into that the box set era that you, Ben, you mentioned earlier with things like Dark Eyes and Doom Coalition. It just gets bigger and bigger. The ambition is huge and I love it.
So what would you say then is your favourite story from these four series?
Well, I guess I've already said that Death in Blackpool and the Anti-Pap trilogy are the ones I love. How about you, Lachlan?
Yes, one of those ones I mentioned earlier, perhaps something like just relative dimensions for the, I don't know, the from the opening moments of that when the music starts playing, it was, I was just instantly in the mood for Christmas and the ensuing hour of adventures is a lot of fun. Great sort of ensemble cast that you've got there.
Yeah, it's magical.
Yeah, and Devon Blackpool's got a real kind of emotional hook as well. And yeah, I love the artifacts. I love the Zygon who fell to Earth. It's a really, really interesting story. It doesn't necessarily go as you expect as well. But they've got a real emotional heart to these stories, and that's what I really like too. But yeah, I think as well, you know, there's really emotional ones. And then but I think as well, it has to be To the Death and Lucy Miller as well, because the scale is huge, and of all these characters, and bringing back like Susan and the grandson as well, and that it's, again, there's so much emotional pull in those final two stories as well, and the culmination of four series of storytelling, and just, you know, bleak and dark and dramatic, and it's a real triumphant sequel to The Dalek Invasion of Earth 2.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably have a few more unconventional favourites from this run, because obviously there's like the more fun light era and then the huge dark bleak era which series 4 just leads up to. So while you have stuff like Human Resources, which has possibly my favourite moment from the series, to the cliffhanger to part 1, and then Lucy Miller to the death and all that, also just some like Deimos and the Resurrection of Mars I quite enjoyed as the Ice Warrior story, and also Prisoner of the Sun and Situation Vacant, I felt were two slightly similar stories which just had a real fun vibe to them, which was probably needed in and amongst this series, especially Situation Vacant.
Is Situation Vacant the one where there's four different candidates to be the new companion, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that one.
It's really funny, yeah.
Agreed, yeah.
Fab. So I think, you know, another really strong era there for Doctor Who, and probably one of them, it's like the first one, is quite accessible, you know, people going into Big Finish, maybe who have only watched the TV series as well. I mean, it was a really good introduction for me and Dan, certainly, and I think you say Lachlan as well, you know, going into Lucy Miller, because it feels a little bit like modern Doctor Who, but also has very much its own identity too. So then things got a little darker and probably more expensive as well after that. With the box set years, you know, not quite...
You mean more expensive for the consumers?
Yes, absolutely, yes. Because we're no longer here at single release stories here. We're talking these big box sets now that kind of came after, which... Yeah. But, you know, they're great too, and they have a real scale to them as well.
Mm.
You get bang for your buck with these four-part box sets.
Yeah, you do. And I think Dark Eyes, particularly the first one, the first Dark Eyes box set, is really strong. And it actually, if you take that as a run to the death, Lucy Miller, and then Dark Eyes 1, it's all written by Nick Briggs, and it's all very kind of dark and war-focused, which is his kind of jam. He does that well, and it's emotionally impactful. And yeah, I've never listened to Dark Eyes again since it came out, but I remember loving it at the time, and the new companion played by Ruth Wilson, Molly, is a fantastic addition, you know, with her wonderful Irish accent, and you know, she's just audibly so different from the previous companions, and she's such a powerful presence. And the arc that they do with her again is really unusual for a companion across the four Dark Eyes box sets. She disappears and reappears, and interesting things happen, which I don't want to spoil. But yeah, that it's again, it's quite a strong run, I think, that those four box sets.
Yeah, just looking at that, you got the name of the companion wrong, Ruth Bradley as Molly.
Oh, sorry.
I was thinking something felt weird, but yeah.
I said it's Ruth Wilson. Yeah, she's probably at even Big Finish's budget, probably.
Yes. Yeah. Well, then again, look at some of the early stuff. They've got like David Harewood and Hayley Atwell in some of their early productions, so.
Oh no, they managed to get some major names in, but it's about timing, isn't it? And I think that the moment to get Ruth Wilson is past. I mean, have you heard that story that the place that Benedict Cumberbatch was on the day that he auditioned for Sherlock was down the road recording a Big Finish story, and that he just popped out for lunch and went to audition for Sherlock. So,
wow, great story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I going to Dark Eyes, yeah, I really, Dark Eyes is dark and it's bleak and it's not necessarily easy listening, but it's so rich at the same time. And yeah, and then when I think, but then it builds and builds when Alex McQueen's Master is really, really kind of fun and very slightly different. And obviously Liv comes into it at some point. Liv comes into it as well.
Yeah, she comes in volume 2, I believe, and then as of recording right now, she's still here in the runs.
Yeah, and Caleb Nicola Walker is just a phenomenal actress anyway. I mean, she's a big actress on British TV and a real good, real strong presence in these sets as well.
Yeah.
I can only have good things to say about Nicola Walker, I think. I'm just a big fan of whatever she does. I first saw her in Spooks way back when as well, and it was suddenly just... when I found out that she was in these big Finnish audios opposite the Eighth Doctor, thought that was great. Probably went back and watched some Spooks. I just love Liv as a character, I think, and I've really really enjoyed how she's continued on across multiple eras. There's been some fantastic stuff there, and from the beginning here onwards.
I would probably say Dark Eyes is probably the most disconnected of the box set years other than the Time War, because while you have Liv there, the rest of it's like the Master and the Daleks and Molly, who isn't in all the others, because like Doom Coalition, Ravnus and stuff, that's more Liv, Helen and the Eleven throughout it, which the box sets all actually lead into each other. Doom Coalition, Ravenous and Stranded, where the Dark Eyes doesn't.
Yeah, well Lachlan, you're a big fan of those, aren't you, those sets?
Yeah, the Doom Coalition was more or less my first proper introduction to the Eighth Doctor, and then I went back and listened to a whole lot of other stuff. That first release was so enjoyable for me to suddenly, you know, have my eyes open, my ears open, rather, as to what Big Finish can do and has done. Yeah, those first two episodes in particular, the Eleven, the episode of the Eleven, and then the Red Lady, blew my mind, really, in what I was thoroughly freaked out and terrified by that second episode. I should not have listened to that late at night. It was a mistake. heading on through Doom Coalition 2, 3, and 4, it sort of builds and builds, and I can really appreciate the ambition I mentioned earlier. It really comes, shines through here in the sort of the way that the storytelling sort of builds step by step up and up as the episodes and the box sets move. New characters and returning characters. You've got River Song suddenly popping up opposite the Eighth Doctor, which was a big thing at the time. The Doom Coalition as an entity within the stories was fascinating, I thought. Yeah, but some huge cliffhangers, you know, Weeping Angels, the Monk, everyone, you know, villains and alliances and all sorts of just amazing stuff. I really, really, really enjoyed that. Coming to it, yeah, my first few years of listening to Big Finish.
Yeah, I feel Doom Coalition is definitely that one of those sort of stories that just over the box sets, you start off relatively small and it ends in a huge universe is going to end in a few minutes. Just big battle with like loads of different characters. Like set 4 just has about 6 different returning characters in it, 3 of which are in one story, so... Also, introducing the 11 is a perfect thing. The 11 is such a good character. Although I think I do prefer the 9 to the 11, which 9's also in Doom Coalition.
Yes, we just sort of breezed over that, haven't we? The introduction of Narfonar as the 11, which is such an intrinsic part to its success, I think, of both Doom Coalition and Ravenous.
Yeah, I would say the 11 is probably one of the best characters ever to come out of Big Finish. You know, one of the best kind of non-TV-related Doctor Who characters there are. I think the idea of this Time Lord who has all the different regeneration personalities in his head at the same time is just phenomenal. And Mark Bonner does such a really good job of all the different voices. I know they've had other actors come and play the 9 and the 12 and so on, but they obviously very recently just released that the 11 box set with the 6th Doctor at Big Finish, and that was just so much fun to listen to, because you know every scene with the 11 is a joy to listen to, I think.
Completely agree. I have no comment. I completely agree. No qualifications.
I've never heard any of those stories, so I'm just listening to you all rave about them and taking it under advisement.
Oh, definitely worth checking out. Yeah. This is where my knowledge is spotty. I've done predominantly the 8th Doctor Adventures of Lucy Miller and some of the Charlie ones and the Time War stuff later on. I still have to catch up with you guys on the Doom Coalition and Ravenous as well.
The box sets are definitely where my most recent listening knowledge comes from. Yeah. Although I would say I think Ravenous is better than Doom Coalition in my eyes.
Yeah, something else that is a big plus for these releases is the combination. I'm just talking a lot about how the sort of sci-fi action ramps up release after release, but there is a combination of different types of stories. You do get a lot of get a few sort of very character-centric pieces, very intentionally from the production team at Big Finish, and those releases really, really shine through as well as just a fantastic opportunity to sit in a room and get to know these three or four main characters, however many there are, and understand them better. And, you know, people talk a lot about, Absent Friends from Doom Coalition 3 comes to mind. The first episode in Doom Coalition 4, which was Ship and a Bottle. It's literally just sort of three main characters in a room or in a spaceship just having a chat. It is very intentionally, but I think it comes across really well and it succeeds. So you get this nice balance between the big sci-fi action things exploding and the universe exploding. It's not so much of a spoiler, I guess. It happens all the time in Doctor Who, but big things happening. It seems to happen every few years. But that, really nice balance between sci-fi action and character.
And Ravenous, I think, holds up better in my eyes consistently over the 4 sets, because that has a lot more returning characters as well, and ends with that finale with the 8th Doctor, Liv, Helen, the 11, and 3 versions of the Master versus the Ravenous, essentially.
And the other thing as well is, obviously, I've got some gaps here, but River Song obviously is a recurring presence in these stories. I know she eats a lot. They do a lot of stuff with River Mead and other Doctors and other characters now.
Yeah,
from classic Doctor Who.
She's
lore.
Mainly in Doom Coalition.
Yeah, so I mean, how does that play out, the River and 8th Doctor dynamic?
I'd say that's quite a fairly good dynamic. They definitely do it in a way where you don't just have to go through the we're just going to memory wipe him again. They take a new aspect on that, which I think works a lot nicer, and they have a very good rapport together, actually.
You do get Alex Kingston and River Song in some pretty ludicrous scenarios as well, as is typical for that character, wearing a nun's wimple, a nun's outfit, for example. Just that visual image on the cover when that was released, I remember thinking, wow, okay, that's quintessential River Song. So it really comes through. The faithfulness of these characterizations, but in new scenarios and new sort of combinations of characters is really fascinating.
I haven't heard any of those stories, but I have heard quite a lot of the River Song box sets, and of course the 8th Doctor is in the very first one, which is quite an effective story, although they do have to do that thing where they wipe his memory or something. I imagine that in the later stories where River has met other Doctors, they've They've moved away from that device without wanting to spoil it for anyone. I'm wondering if, and I've not heard these, so just stop me if I'm wrong. But, you know, when we first see River in the TV series and she sees the 10th Doctor and says, "I've never seen you so young before," meaning that's the first Doctor she has, the earliest Doctor she has encountered. I feel like they've reinterpreted that line to mean, "I've never seen you looking so young before," because therefore she can have met all the others.
Yeah, I don't know, because, like, I know we're, obviously there's a River Song set coming out this month as a recording with the 3rd Doctor, obviously not sure how they're going to do that. Like, the 4th and 5th Doctors, they do go at it a bit different than the conventional memory wipe. I haven't heard the 6th and 7th ones, so I'm not quite sure how they do that. 8 just sort of goes in and around. Doom Coalition takes it a bit different. But with all the River Song and David Tennant audios, they treat it as post Silence in the Library, so Ten already knows who she is, so she doesn't have to wipe his memory.
Yeah, and in Doom Coalition 3 specifically, there is a mechanic by which the 8th Doctor and River Song are allowed to interact without necessarily the Doctor knowing her identity.
I guess then moving on, there's probably two strands with the 8th Doctor currently on Big Finish. So you've got Stranded, which is the continuation after Ravenous, and then you're jumping ahead to Time War, which is really the kind of prequel to the War Doctor stuff and the War Doctor Begins stuff we have now as well. So let's talk briefly about Stranded first. And so we've had a couple of releases so far as at the time of recording this.
Yeah, we're about halfway through. Stranded 3's in December. Yeah. So this podcast might go out before then, not sure.
Yeah, might do, yeah.
But yeah, so far Stranded is quite good. The first set's definitely more unconventional Doctor Who, while the second one goes a bit more into what the show usually is, while still trying to sort of keep the conceit of being stranded.
And by stranded, we're talking stranded on Earth without to move around the galaxy, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. I've heard the first box set of Stranded, and I loved it, I have to say, even though it's such an accident of timing for Big Finish that the whole conceit was, we're going to strand him on Earth in 2020, and he'll have to deal with living a normal life.
Well, at least it was normal.
We were listening to it going, "Oh, this is nostalgic. I remember when life was like this." But it's very strong writing. It's very nice focused drama, and it's the first time I'd heard the character of Helen, but she's instantly engaging. And obviously, like you all said, Nicola Walker is fantastic as well.
I completely agree, and not living in the UK myself, obviously, I felt like I was there. I was living in the middle of London in contemporary London, which is fascinating as well, for me, very enjoyable. And yeah, big fan of that first set, simply for how domestic and down to earth it is, and also how vulnerable, I guess, it makes the 8th Doctor, an incarnation who could possibly be one of the most human of all the Doctors, certainly up until that point, and to put him sort of just in a house, literally at a flat, and having him, you know, deal with day-to-day activities like paying the bills and things like that, it made the character incredibly vulnerable, and that's fascinating from a dramatic perspective, to have your leading man, the one who's supposed to know everything and always have a way out, to have him in a scenario where he literally doesn't know what to do, or is feeling, you know, at unease with the whole situation, it puts us at unease, and that's dramatically something that's brilliant.
It is, and McGann responds to that wonderfully well, I think. Really energises him. Although it has to be said, he's been brilliant almost throughout the entire series. He can rarely...
Yeah, he's amazing.
Big Finish at one point revealed that he was getting a bit fed up with it, and it was bringing Sheridan Smith in that convinced him to carry on. And I found that just shocking, because you wouldn't think... He's, you know, you never get that sense from his performances. He's always absolutely wonderful. And again, that's why he's my favourite Doctor, I think. There's just such an energy and a subtlety to him as well at all times.
And of course, the last thing I've got on these sets before we can wrap up this bit of the discussion is the Time War stuff with Raki Thakra, I think how you pronounce her name, as Bliss, his companion. So this is really going into the Time War. This is obviously jumping ahead. There's obviously big gap between Stranded and the Time War stuff. And I guess it allows very cleverly Doctor Who to continue releasing box after box after box set with like Liv and Helen and those stories, or where they continue with, and also do Time War stuff, which again can go as long as it wants before we get to Night of the Doctor. Yeah. And there's some really kind of interesting stuff there. And I think it goes big, and there's some kind of clever concepts there around, you know, Time War weaponry and the impact on the galaxy, which I really enjoy. And I think Bliss is another one of those good, you know, intelligent, courageous characters. You know, not necessarily one of the strongest companions they've had, but she certainly plays well off Paul McGann's Doctor.
Yeah, I'd say, like, personally, I think the first two sets were a bit lacking, especially set two. I didn't really like that one at all. But then set three massively improved, and then set four was just amazing.
Yeah.
Especially with the twist of what they do at the end of set three leading into set four, and also being able to bring Davros in.
Well, actually, you got Davros, and of course you got the brilliant Velyar back, played by...
Michael Jason. Oh, yeah.
Michael Jason, that's it, yeah.
The War of Valyard. I really want
yeah,
to
Yeah, which is a great concept.
I haven't heard any of them. Yeah. I haven't listened to a lot of Big Finish's Time War stuff, to be honest. I'm not sure I really want to know what happened in the Time War, or if I do, I'd like it to be in a completely different medium. Like, I don't think you could really do it on TV, and I'm not sure audio is the way I'd like it either. I've always thought it might be a great animated series. But, I really want to hear the War Valley art, so... Maybe I'll eat my words.
Yeah, that's something fascinating. That's the fascinating thing, isn't it, about all of what Big Finish does, is that there are so many different eras or different options that you can delve into and make your own. You can you know, just specifically for the Eighth Doctor, there's so many different eras of his lifetime that you can listen to or not listen to as you wish. And that's fascinating. It's just, we know his beginning and his end. But absolutely nothing in between, and slowly we fill in the gaps. But you know, there's always so much potential for more, and when you say that the Eighth Doctor is your favourite Doctor, I completely see why, and he's certainly any Eighth Doctor release at Big Finish is a big event piece release, and with good reason.
Yeah, it feels like it's like the prestige element of Big Finish. You know, as much as it's great to hear Tom Baker back or Sylvester McCoy back, you know, it's Paul McGann's. They're the jewel in the crown, I think, for Big Finish releases.
Paul McGann, and like obviously what they've done with Colin Baker as well, is definitely a stronger thing. Obviously now we have Christopher Eccleston, their continued output of David Tennant, but Paul McGann still has that torch.
I think so. So, to wrap up then, we're coming to the end of this podcast then. What is your favourite Eighth Doctor story overall?
Again, we'd be here for a while if I was listing all of my favourite stories or stories that I really like. But something that I was thinking about this, and I came across, remembered listening to Ravenous 2, I think it was, and the sort of the middle two-parter. It's this Christmas story, Better Watch Out and Fairy Tale of Salzburg, and it's sort of this everything the Doctor Who does best in 2 hours. It's this fantastic Christmas story. It's got emotion and pathos. It's got humour. It's got a big monster, some sort of time travel hijinks, great twist at the end, and as a sort of a pastiche of It's a Wonderful Life. I think it really, really succeeds, and that's what. If for the purposes of this discussion, is my favourite Eighth Doctor story at Big Finish.
What are you, Dan? It's all Death and Blackpool and that.
Well, I've mentioned those, but I'll mention another one. Seasons of Fear is my absolute favourite, but I've already talked about that, so I'll just say The Stones of Venice. I don't think it's... I'm not just saying that because the writer Paul Miles is a friend of mine. However... and I understand that it's an odd story that's kind of maybe lacking in some of the kind of high drama elements, and the kind of epic elements that people enjoy in Doctor Who. But I've just listened to it a million times. I know almost every line. I think it's hugely quotable. It was also the very first Big Finish that Paul McGann ever recorded, and not released. And you can tell that it's his first one, that he's not quite... sure what he's doing with it, but it results in a really interesting performance. There's an edginess to it that's a bit different. This is how much I love it. I have the music CD of it, and it is my alarm clock every morning that wakes me up. It's the score by Russell Stone, so...
Amazing.
Yeah, for me, I mean, there are just so many, so I think if I was to pick one from each, I'd probably say Charms of Midnight for the Charlie ones, possibly something like Situation Vacant for the Lucy ones, and from the big box sets, possibly the opening two-part of Time War 4, Palindrome, or Day of the Master, which ends Ravenous 4.
Yeah, there's some great stuff there. I think for me, briefly, Charms of Midnight is my absolute favourite. From the modern box sets, I think it's probably have to be The War of Eldiar, if it was really, really cleverly done. So yeah, some great choices
from everyone.
Thank you, Lachlan and Dan, for joining us for the episode. Where can we find you online if you want to talk more Doctor Who?
Well, I'll go first. You can find me on Twitter at LifeIsAboutFic, because my blog is called Life is About Fiction, which is a WordPress blog. Obviously, I review for the We Made This network as well.
I don't have Twitter, but you can also find me at We Made This. Some of the reviews that I've been posting about Big Finish, you can find them on there.
For our Christmas episode of the TARDIS Crew, we'll be doing a deeper dive into Big Finish's The Chimes of Midnight. You know, as I've said, for me, and possibly for you, Ben, the best Christmas Doctor Who story there is.
Yes.
Thanks to Lachlan and Dan for joining us. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS Crew and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Doctor Who is not all we'll be discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. Join us again soon for more Doctor Who discussions on the TARDIS Crew and our exploration of the decidedly festive The Chimes of Midnight. Because somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea is getting cold.
Elsewhere, and We Made This. We dig music.
I feel that this is the first song that properly ripped into R. Kelly as well.
Which is amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
Right, so R. Kelly
bang
has
on time.
Only just been convicted.
Yeah.
The first time I ever heard of R. Kelly was reading Smash Hits. So this is before I'd even started reading Kerrang. So I started getting Kerrang in 95. So this must have been 94.
Yep.
And it was when...
he married Aaliyah, who was Aaliyah, like, what, 14?
Yeah, basically time. Aaliyah had just released her album Age Ain't Nothing But A Number.
The Movie Palace Podcast.
The book I want to tell you about is The Art of American Screen Acting, 1912 to 1960, by Dan Callahan. What I try to do in my movie programs is introduce people to films they haven't seen, and some of these people are younger viewers who haven't watched a lot of classic cinema, especially anything predating Star Wars. They'll often make comments like, I really like the movie, but the acting back then was pretty awful. The Art of American Screen Acting meets such comments head on.
Observing the Pattern, a Fringe podcast.
So there is a real element of redemption. You know, we talk about William Bell getting redemption in this episode, or redeeming himself for his actions with his sacrifice, but the whole arc of Fringe is in many ways Walter redeeming himself as well, and realising what he's done wrong, for one thing, and realising where he's gone wrong and coming to terms with that. So yeah, this is a very key point, I think, in that whole macro story of Fringe, as well as Walter's character.
Yeah, definitely. And there's also an element that we discussed in a previous episode about the weaponization of children.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.